We're doing the Shat Ramban, Torat Hashem Temimam, and the Ramban had asked the key question he's going to focus the whole speech about, and that is, what's so great about Torah? Why is Torah described as such a great wisdom? It certainly seems simple, and even the smallest student reads the stories of Torah, and the nations seem to have succeeded in copying it. And anyways, they have their own system. What's so unique about Torah? That's his question, which he will spend the whole letter addressing. And so the Ramban had begun and said that you should know that whatever you see that people know or understand is a derivative of Torah. It's either from the Torah or fruits of the Torah or fruits of the fruits of the Torah. And if it weren't for the Torah, the Ramban had said, then the difference between man and the donkey he rides on is non-existent. Man is merely more sophisticated, but not different. V'chein tirei hayom b'umot ha'chokot me'otz ha'tora v'anvuah. And you'll see, if you look at the nations that are far from the land of Torah, far from prophecy, hashvi ha'ktzavot kigon yoshvei Romania, v'atatrim v'umot ha'tzaba. He says, these different tribes that are so wild, descendants of the Mongols, who used to live in the north, in Romania, Poland, and Russia. The these nations that live very far away, they don't know of a creator. They think the world always was, always will be. And they don't spend time thinking about whether the world is a new creation or not. They don't ask themselves, is there a force that makes the world turn? As King David said in this psalm, take a look at the world. You see there are forces at play. You see there's action. You see there's dynamics. So you understand that there's something that makes everything alive. You see the nations surrounding us, says the Ramban, they do analyze this and ask these questions. You go further away, you start finding nations that they live a very primitive lifestyle. So Ramban attributes that to whether they've been exposed to Torah or not. He says the Torah is what developed the insights into all of science, into all of nature. He says, you see, the further people are from Torah, the further they are also from civilization, from development. I don't know, you know, this is something which today it's very hard to know how to explain that meaning. So you're going to say, the Indians were primitive until the Europeans came with their what they knew of Torah, right? Is that really what we'd say? I don't know. I'm saying I'm asking logically now, not religiously. Meaning, is it true that the Americas, South America, North America were very primitive compared to Europe? Is it true that Africa was more primitive compared to Europe? I don't know. I'm saying the Ramban's reasoning goes that the closer the nations were to Torah, the more they developed. The more they developed in science, etc. So then you'd say, that the civilization started impacting westward. So then you see civilization developing, but again, developing, he says, through Torah. So that's the idea that Ramban is saying. And again, I'm not clear historically that we can say, yeah.
Does it really mean the presence of Jews in the countries?
No, he means the impact of Torah. He says the nations that were close to the closer they were to the Jewish people, the more they were impacted by it. And then that impact had a ripple effect. The further you go, the less the effect. He's not saying specifically where Jews lived. He's not going that route.
I think at least with war, saying technologically in terms of military, they were a lot more advanced. I mean, I don't know, something that you could like prove.
Still have tribes.
The Chinese had gunpowder long before the Europeans did, and they were very far. I'm just saying, again,
right,
logically.
It is true.
So you'll say they didn't channel it to warfare, but if I remember correctly, historically, the Chinese did, and they were very far from the Jews.
Too,
so I don't know. I'm saying I know I'm supposed to present.
Very far. I mean, we read that the Meir Yeshiva, they were in China.
That was now. I'm talking about 800 years ago. Okay. I don't know. Let's move on. Because man, when he is born, if he is not given an education, so then he is like an animal. Shenemar, as the verse says, Ayirpere Adam Yivaled. When a man is born, he's a wild donkey. So Ramban is giving us a very important perspective. We would ask on the Ramban, does that mean that man without Torah is destined to be wild, to be cruel, to be what? How far does the Ramban mean to take that? That without Torah, he's still held accountable to the seven Ohad laws, it would seem, right? So how far does the Ramban mean to take that? That without the Torah, man is a wild animal. Is he entitled to be a wild animal? I'm saying, we would ask, is a person only going to convert if he's a genius like Avram Avinu, or he's exposed to the Jewish people? Or is there some expectation that other people can reach the same conclusion without being exposed to the Jewish people? Ramban seems to say no, which seems to be in line with Rambam, which seems to be in line with the book of Yonah, where it sounds like Hashem says, I'm not holding all these people accountable, they don't know any better. Well, how far are you going to take that excuse if they don't know any better? So then can they be cannibals? How far are you going to say they don't know any better?
That excuse didn't work in the time of the flood.
Oh, okay, in the time of the flood, the Ramban will address that later on, that everyone knew, everyone was descendants of Adam, everyone knew what Hashem wanted of them. They didn't have that excuse because they knew about it. But Ramban also agrees that every non-Jew is held accountable to the seven Noahide laws. So then it's not that you can say a man is born a wild animal and there's nothing without Torah. Again, how far we take what Ramban said, this is a huge philosophical question. You know, we're reading it in one sentence.
Rabbi, do the nations know how many nations are working?
Yeah, that's the thing. Don't we need to teach them? Because they're also not aware of these seven.
There are many people who are not aware of these seven Noahide laws. I mean, many Muslims, many Christians.
But they keep doing without knowing them, maybe.
We read a long piece, not so long, but we read a piece by Rav Chanan Wasserman, where he argues that the fact that every non-Jew is held accountable to the seven Noahide laws teaches us that A, a person is supposed to be able to figure them out on his own, and B, he says, how do you figure them out on your own? Because you have to ask yourself, I didn't create myself, I have a creator. Now what does he want of me? He says, the base question is, I know there's another force out there, and that should drive me to ask, what does he want of me? That's the direction of Chanan Wasserman develops it. We didn't walk away from that letter with such a clear understanding, because we asked, can we prove, we, who are Jewish, now can we, who know the Noahide laws, can we explain why Eivar Min HaChai is a logical mitzvah? Why is it more prohibited to eat a limb of an animal that was alive than to eat the animal after it's dead? What's the difference if you hack off a leg or hack off its head? Like, why does that matter? I could understand that you would say be a vegetarian, but that's not a Noahide law. So if I'm not going to be a vegetarian, what difference does it make if an animal's dead or alive? This limb is no longer alive. If you tell me, Tzar Balei Chaim, don't cause needless pain to an animal, I can understand that. But if you say, no, you're allowed to eat meat, just don't eat a limb from an animal while it was still alive, if it was taken off and it was alive, why? Why is that different than killing the animal in order to eat it? It's better to kill the animal than to take off just its leg? I'm saying, I don't know why that's logical. I don't know why Rav Chanan Wasserman says a non-Jew should be able to figure it out. Well, I can't figure it out. I don't know why. I don't know why that's logical. And so on.
Is it the responsibility of the Jews to teach seven Noahide laws to the rest of the nation?
I don't know.
He does a big job of trying to teach.
Right. The question is, why is that our responsibility? I don't know. because there are so many Jews that don't know. So why do I have to worry about non-Jews? I'm saying there are Jews who don't know how to finish the pasuk Shema Yisrael.
Would eating lobster or crab for non-Jews be like forbidden?
No.
Because the you have to cook it. You have to boil them in water and they scream for like 10 minutes.
They don't actually vocally scream.
No, they do. Like the only way, and like it's like
you boil them alive, but they're not vocally.
But it must be like torturing for them.
Then they could die.
And like you know, like 10 minutes. I don't know. It seems like it's VLBS. I don't know.
I hear. I don't know. I don't know, because remember that technically, halachically, when you slaughter a chicken, if you don't cut enough veins, the slaughter can be kosher, and the chicken can run around for half a day without its head, technically. And that chicken's still going to be kosher. So I'm saying don't be so quick to assume, like the Rambam writes, I'm saying if the Torah's concern in slaughtering an animal was the pain of the animal, then the Torah should have just said, be vegetarian. Meaning, if that's your concern, then don't eat the animal.
But you know, the longest chicken to run around without a head, it's like 8 months.
Okay.
It wasn't a half a day. It was.
The halacha says that the proper way, the appropriate way, to slaughter a chicken is to make sure to cut the veins so that it dies more quickly. But that doesn't disqualify it if you didn't do it. It's a question of what's appropriate. It's not a question of what's kosher. So that's what I'm saying. Before we're quick to judge, let's look back at our own legal system, at what the Torah tells us. So the Torah says minimize the animal's pain. The Torah does say that you shouldn't cause an animal unnecessary pain. We have a mitzvah of tzar ba'alei chaim, not to cause an animal unnecessary pain, even in terms of taking off its load, if it's carrying too heavy a load. Again, but when we're looking at the non-Jew and saying, hey, you should figure this out, I don't know how to figure it out. I don't know. So I have a question. Forgive my honesty. I you might be more comfortable if I gave this all as though it was all obvious and it all made sense. I share with you my questions. What I know, I try to explain. What I don't know, I explain as well. And if you'll know, sometimes guys enlighten me. It happens too. So. ואם דעתו ושכלו של אדם בלא מלמד נותנת לו לחשוב בחידוש לפי שאין הגלגל מנהיג עצמו לזולתו מניעו. And even if a person without an educator could think that, well, what's causing all the forces to move here? What's causing the planets to move? מכל מקום אין אצלו לא מצווה ולא עבירה. So even if a person could logically deduce, there must be a creator to this world because there's a starting point that I don't understand, but, and this is a very key point the Ramban is saying, that does not obligate him to any ethical, moral system. No one says that creator expects of me anything or is upset with me if I misbehave. And the truth is that when we live through life, Hashem created a world where it's not so obvious that when you do mitzvah, everything works out right. And when one would do an aveira, things work out wrong. You could see a person who's cheated and stolen and done a lot of inappropriate things, and he seems to be successful. There were many times in history where the people who made it to the top certainly seemed to be the people with the least scruples. They didn't seem to be the finest people. On the contrary, fine people were bummed down, and inappropriate people. It could be Stalin, it could be Hitler. They certainly seem to have their successes, their golden era. So the idea, says the Ramban, when we speak about the Torah, he says Torah is our source of knowledge, and not only our source of knowledge, the world's source of knowledge. Torah is what enlightens us that there's a creator. You could figure that out on your own. Well, you wouldn't know what's appropriate or inappropriate behavior. And here, we have to understand the gravity of what Ramban is saying now. And I'm going to discuss to you a little bit, but I think it's very important. I think I told you guys that as I was sitting by my grandfather, there was another person who was helping out. My grandfather was ill, lying on his deathbed, and I was trying to help him, and there was someone else. Right? So the other person sitting there at one point says to me, we had a break, my grandfather was sleeping, I made a blessing, Berchos HaTorah. He heard me, and he said to me, why did God have to choose us? The Jewish people suffer so much, why did God have to choose us? So I said to him, you want a real answer? Are you prepared to hear the real answer? I don't want to offend you, but are you really ready to hear it? He said, yeah, tell me, no problem. I said, we're both dealing with my grandfather here, but the doctors are saying that it's a matter of a day or two that he'll pass away. Maybe we should heat up the barbecue and have a barbecue when he passes away. Why do you bury him? Why are you wasting good meat?
Some places around the world do that.
Right. So Ramban is saying, if you didn't have Torah, what scruples would you have? What's wrong with doing that? Conservation of energy. Maybe we're saving him. You know, he still has a representation in the world. It disgusts us to think about it. I could almost puke saying it to him. I could almost cry and telling you. I could almost puke. But Be'emet, Ramban is saying, without Torah, what's right and wrong? How can you define what's good or bad? Is incest bad? Why is it bad? Is adultery bad? Why is it bad? How can you prove that something's wrong? So Torah has permeated the values of the world such that in almost every country it's illegal to commit incest. But now we're going to ask a question, why? Why is it any different if it's his daughter or his sister or the next door neighbor's daughter or sister? Why is that different? How can the law make it illegal? So to us it's anathema. But can you explain a logical reason, what the logical difference is?
People started challenging that in America recently.
I'm sorry to hear that. If that's the question, so then you should also make it illegal to marry someone without a genetic test. Maybe there'd be Tay-Sachs, or who knows what else. That's the claim, or maybe Hitler's eugenics are also right. If we're about developing the human race and the human species, so then maybe we should just get rid of all the people who have mental illnesses, because they're just weighing us down.
In Israel, it is a lot for genetic. At least for you have to take a genetic test.
No,
everyone I know that's Ashkenazi that's getting married.
That's their choice. There's no such law.
I thought you have to. If you're Ashkenazi.
No,
you have to get genetically tested in order to be
So now you know.
In order to be put in the best,
no.
Sign up for the best terms.
No, sir. But at any rate, when Ramban says this one-liner, if you don't have Torah, then just the idea that there is a creator does not give you a moral system, we have to understand how far that goes. And then you start questioning, wait a second, without Torah, what are my values? If my values are genetic values, if my values are a question of efficiency, so then I should certainly get rid of inefficient people. I should work on developing a world of efficiency.
North Korea, right?
Okay. But again, can you say there's something wrong with that? What's wrong with killing? It's bad. What's bad about it? No, I don't understand. Can you prove logically that it's bad? And what if the person doesn't sense anything? You give him an injection, he goes to sleep, he doesn't wake up. What's bad about it? Can you explain what's bad?
Let's go out.
So the whole world has a value system that's affected by Torah. So people are taking it to different extremes and different directions. But you look around you. The Muslims are willing to kill. They don't think they're bad people. I mean, there are people being killed every day. The Americans are willing to kill. They don't think they're bad people. All around the world, you know what the Egyptian soldiers do for target practice? They shoot at fugitives running. That's a target practice. I'm not joking. Target practice in the desert. They go to places where they know the fugitives are running, and then at night, day, that's a target practice. Again, you're going to say the whole world's evil? So the Torah tells you what's right and what's wrong. Says the Ramban, without Torah, what logical reason could you give that something's right or wrong? So the Christian believes he should kill the Muslim in order to redeem Jerusalem. The Muslim believes he should kill the Christian in order to he should redeem Jerusalem. And the world's busy killing one another, and everyone believes they're good people. And you could go to the world 60, 70 years ago, and then it was legitimate to kill the gypsies and the Jews and all kinds of other people because in the name of philosophy, or you go to Stalin and you suddenly discover that again, in order to make the world a better place, it's completely legitimate to kill millions of people. So the values the Ramban is talking about seem obvious to us. The world has proven to us that they're not at all obvious. And in the name of all kinds of philosophies that human beings have developed, human beings have been willing to be more than cruel. If it's the Chinese that leave their daughters out because they're only allowed to have one kid and you're better off with a boy than a girl, so is it so terrible if a wolf comes and eats her? You know, they just leave her out the door and whatever happens, happens. Or worse, I'm saying...
India has a lot of... Yeah. They were burning widows until the 90s.
Okay.
Any time her husband died, they just would burn her.
That's till the 90s, you're saying?
That was very recent, right?
Again, I'm just saying a brief look at what's going on around us in the world is an indication of what the Ramban is saying. If you don't have the Torah, so then what is good or evil is really up to society, and society feels very comfortable making rules. You know, he's talking about India. There's the Puritans, Salem witch trials. You throw a virgin into the river. If she drowns, she was innocent. If she doesn't, then she's obviously a witch. You have to kill her, right? That's a very good trial, Salem witch trials. I'm saying the world was very comfortable doing a lot of things throughout world history up until today. You don't have to go to the 90s. I'm saying... yes, sir?
But Western civilization right nowadays, for America or European countries, their law is based on, like, Ten Commandments.
I don't know that the United States has no qualms about making over a million refugees in Afghanistan, dropping a bomb in Syria.
Their own country, they have a law.
And even in their own country, every few years you start discovering things they did behind people's backs. The laws are external, but when they wanted to check how the atomic development will affect people, so the government experimented on its own soldiers and citizens without people knowing, right? The United States government. Right, this is known.
And people are trying to legalize incest.
Okay. I'm just saying this concept to us sounds foreign because we're so ingrained with the values of Torah that we have a hard time imagining a society that doesn't understand that killing is evil, that you respect the body of the deceased, that the values that we hold dear seem obvious to us. Well, they don't seem obvious to people around us. Mikol makom en etzol lo mitzvah velo avera, says the Ramban, without Torah, even if you could figure out that there's a creator, you can't figure out what's a commandment and what's a prohibition. Velo dat, velo cheshbon, you don't feel like anyone's paying attention to what you're doing. You don't have to give an accounting to anyone. Part of what keeps us in line is because we're taught that we will give an accounting. The Torah repeatedly warns us.
Yeah, but something that it needs to repeatedly, even though it's something that's accepted in society, in the Jewish society, it's something that needs to be reminded constantly.
Ramban will address that. Let's hear later on in the speech. The Ramban will discuss that. And without Torah, you can't explain logically why one action is better than another. Why is kindness good? What's good about kindness? Because it's productive. Again, if the way we factor things is productivity, so then there are a lot of things we should factor into productivity, including bumping off all the people who are unproductive in society. Let's get rid of them. They just weigh down society. I mean, that's basically what Hitler tried to do. And that's what Ramban is saying. Without Torah, how could you explain why one action is better than the other? Now, there is a fundamental point that Ramban is making here. He's not the only one. Other Rishonim, other early commentaries make this point as well. And later commentaries challenge part of this, and this goes back to our discussion at the very beginning tonight. A question we have to ask is, we say every morning, Elokai neshama shenatata bi tohorahi, Hashem, you placed the soul within me, it is pure. And this concept, it would seem, is true for all of humankind. We do work with the concept that Hashem created within us a conscience. And we are supposed to sense on some level what's right and wrong. The problem is, you look around and what are you going to say? Most of the world is doing things, has been doing things, which lead you to question, is that so? If it's the French Revolution, I'm saying, look at world history. People have been ready to take up arms and kill their neighbors, and they don't seem to feel like there's something terrible about it. They might be embarrassed from the next guy knowing what they did, but do they really feel bad about it themselves? And in Hebrew, we have two terms. There is busha, that's one type of shame, and there's klima, that's another type of shame. There's shame that a person is in the middle of doing his taxes and suddenly he realizes he made a stupid mistake and he feels embarrassed. No one saw him, that's not the point. That's one type of shame. Then there's shame that a person does something and he looks over his shoulder, he wants to make sure no one's seeing him, because if they did, he'd feel embarrassed. That's a different type of shame. There are two types of shame. Well, Ramban seems to be describing a world where without Torah, you wouldn't know right from wrong. That's what the Ramban is saying. And then we go back to our original question. Then according to Ramban, how are the nations ever supposed to deduce the seven Noahide laws? Only through coming in contact with the Jews? I'm leaving the question hanging.
He makes it seem like that person in the world thinks a lot more than they seems like they do.
As in, like, I want to address that in a minute. Let's just finish this paragraph. One more sentence. And certainly, if you don't have Torah, then there's no difference between Sunday and Monday, Monday and Tuesday. Shabbos is not a special day. Every day of the year is the same. Every year is the same. Life becomes very bland. The animal doesn't sense a difference between Sunday and Monday and Tuesday. The human being, through Torah, has a difference in his week, in his month, in his year. That's the direction that Ramban is taking. So Bini asked, Ramban seems to be giving mankind more credit for thought than mankind actually invests. And this breaks down into two. Many Rishonim point out what you just said, that the average person does not ask all these questions or spend time thinking about this. And I think it was in the Chazon Ish that we saw something which I think is also very common, and that is that people aren't willing to take the extra step to verify. Most people will start with asking the question, either get a bad answer, or see that they're not getting an answer, and just move on with life. Because it's much more interesting to make money, to get a degree, to get the honors that people give them for being a success in what the society considers a success. People don't necessarily stop after a certain point. Meaning, I think many people start out asking the question. Part of the question is, will they be encouraged to keep asking? Or will they accept whatever everyone's doing, or people aren't really answering them? How many people are willing to keep questioning? And usually questioning comes with a price. Sometimes it's the price of ostracism. Sometimes it's the price of risking your life. It's definitely not pleasant. Most people who ask questions run into a lot of hardships with everyone around them, including their family, including their peers. That's the classical course people take. So the fact that people don't continue asking, I think, is reflective of an unhealthy social pressure. We definitely live in a society that has been pressurizing us. Don't ask so many questions. Society is not conducive to honest questioning. And that's why as you're saying, most people don't question going further into life, but it breaks down into two.
Are they responsible to, I'm saying, is he putting this responsibility on the average Joe to ask these questions?
He's saying they won't have answers without Torah. The Ramban is taking it very far.
I'm saying they won't even have a question.
I don't know. I have a hard time answering you because I think we definitely see that in the average group, I think every person here dared to ask questions, and every person here, every person in Machon Meir knows that most of the people around them were not interested. And you try sharing it with them, and you try talking to them about it, and that's nice, but they're moving on with life. And to every person that made it to Machon Meir, the question was burning. It was important, and other things were less important. And to the people around them, and I think every person here has seen that in their own life, the people around them, it was less important. Or they were more willing to conform, more willing to go with the flow. When I was a teenager, so I asked a lot of questions. And at some point I came to a realization that most people around me, if I would share with them my questions, they would end up being an apikoros. So when people would start discussing philosophy with me, I would say, you're an observant Jew. You want to stay that way. Stay with your peace. Why do you have to have my troubles? Because I saw that most people were not ready to ask the questions and were more ready to accept answers without verifying or questioning those answers. And to open their eyes to the question would usually leave them with the question because they weren't going to continue searching. So that's, I'm saying, I think that's what we find in many Rishonim, that they write as intros to their books on philosophy. They say this is not for the masses. Which brings us back to a major question of what are the masses really supposed to be doing? What does God expect of them? Can you say, that's the question we discussed last week, can you say, like, what were they created for? If they're not going to understand what they're doing here. Do we say that God doesn't expect better of them? That's perfectly okay. I'll leave you with the thought. Let's take it to the extremity. A Ger Tzedek once asked me the following question. His father suffers from mental retardation. His father has the intellect of a 5-year-old. His father is a devout Christian who goes to church every Sunday. He asked me, should I try explaining to my father that what he's doing is wrong? My father doesn't understand too much about the difference between Christianity or Islam or Judaism. He doesn't understand. Am I supposed to start explaining to him why I converted and why what he's doing I disagree with, etc.? So we all understand that he's not going to get anywhere by explaining that to his father. Now let's go from the extremity to the average person. Are you going to get anywhere by talking to the average person? It's a very tough question. Are we really willing to give up on most of society? Are we really willing to say that most people are not going to hold on to the conversation long enough to understand things that they should understand? It's a very tough question. Again, I'm just presenting the sides of what you've raised. I'm not saying one way or the other. I'm just saying it's very hard to accept that you don't even have to try. So we'll pick up here.